Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Veg Grower Podcast. My name is Richard and I am on a mission to grow all my fruit, vegetables and herbs in my allotment and my garden. Now, coming up today, there's been a certain drop in the temperature this week. And this has got me thinking about what we can do to prepare our chickens for the winter. Now, of course, we have an update from the allotment, but first, let's find out what's been going on in the vegetable patch here at home this week. Well, I'm here at home in the vegetable patch for the first update for this week. Now, most of this week, the weather was quite warm. Although we did get a couple of days of rain, and towards the end of the week, the temperature really dropped. However, the biggest problem that I've noticed this week is just how early it is when it gets dark. The lack of sunlight is certainly very noticeable. It's 6 o'clock now, the sun is setting and it's getting dark. Because of this cold weather and the drop in light levels, we have figured out it is time to start moving some of our tender plants into the greenhouse to give them a bit of a protection. These were chilies and aubergines, and these have been growing in pots, but they have now all been moved into the greenhouse for a bit of protection where they should hopefully continue to grow for a little bit longer with the extra protection from the elements. Now, the hope is that we can overwinter these plants. Chilies, I know it is certainly possible to overwinter, given a bit of protection, a bit of TLC, shall we say, but it would be nice to think we could do it with aubergines this year as well. So all these pots have been moved into the greenhouse. They are still fruiting, they are still producing, so they've still got plenty of life left in them. Let's just hope that that will keep them growing throughout the winter. Now, other plants will, of course, follow into this greenhouse eventually, the peach tree and the grape plant, but we need a bit more room in the greenhouse. And it's important for me also to use the greenhouse for growing things over winter. Lettuces are one example. Now, with many of my plants protected, it was time to give my spade a bit of TLC. Now, every year I try and give all my garden tools a bit of TLC as a good clean up, a sharpen, remove rust, and add a bit of protection to the handles and things. And what I thought I'd do each week, I'm going to do a different tool. And this week I decided it was time to do my spade. So, first of all, we started off with a really good clean with a stiff brush, just removing all the mud. That way it is clean. Now, this isn't too difficult for me because what I actually do is I keep a bucket of sand with oil added to it in my shed. And whenever I finish using my tools, I dip the ends into this sand, which cleans off the mud and coats the spade in oil as well. So when it comes to giving it a good clean, pretty easy to do with a good stiff brush. Then once all the mud is off, I use a bit of sandpaper just to remove any rust and smooth the handle. I like wooden handles, so this is very important. Luckily, it's not too difficult to do this again because I keep on top of it. It doesn't take long. And then after that, I just use the file to get the edge on the blade once again. A spade actually has a blade, which makes it easy for digging. So just using a file, I run it across the edge to try and sharpen it up. Now, we really want to get rid of any nicks at the same time. Again, not too much of a problem on this particular tool, but just running the file against it, got the nice shiny blade once again. And then I finished off by treating the wooden handle to a soaking of linseed oil. This actually took a couple of attempts because the oil soaked into the wood quite quickly and we really want it to soak in really, really well. So I'd sooner use a bit too much than not enough. Then I just left that to dry. And there we go. That is my spade serviced and good for another year. My spade is actually very old. It's probably older than me. But with regular care, especially with handles, soaking them in a bit of a linseed oil, they can last for a very, very long time. As I said, each week we're going to be talking about a particular tool and how we are maintaining it for the year. Now, we have also sown a few seeds, cauliflower, spring onions, lettuce and broccoli. All of these are going to be growing over winter. Lettuce and spring onions, we might get winter harvests, but the cauliflower and the broccoli, we're looking for spring harvests. And then after that, I moved to the herb garden area and it was time to give that a bit of a spruce up. Removed a few of the weeds and pruned back some of the herbs. Now, the sage herbs had grown particularly big. They are actually planted in the ground and they needed a good haircut, shall we say, to tidy them up. So I gave them a good chop and tidy up with that. Of course, we could use some of the prunings for cuttings and grow some more herbs next year. But what I also then done, other herbs that are in pots and sinks, and I gave those a bit of a tidy up as well. And then I added a bit of compost to the soil just to add a few nutrients to all the plants. And then I went over that with some wood chip, just covering the soil with a wood chip. Now, this was wood chip that I produced a few weeks ago when I was off work and cut back some of the bushes. Now, this is just placed over the soil as a bit of a mulch. And the idea being here, one, it just looks a little bit better, a little bit tidier. But it's also going to act as a blanket and a mulch. It's going to stop the rain washing away the nutrients. It's going to reduce the amount of weeds coming through. And it's going to cover the soil, giving like a blanket to any plants that are growing in the ground, the roots particularly of our sage plants. As I said, I think it looks really good now and I'm really, really happy with that. Now, this herb garden actually surrounds my chickens and if it's cold for my plants, it might get cold for the chickens too. So in a moment, I'm going to share how I prepare my chickens for winter. But before that, let's find out what we've been doing this week in the Supporters Club. This week in the Supporters Club, we have been sowing a collection of seeds including cauliflower and broccoli, both of which came from this month's seed pack that members of our Supporters Club receive. Now, the Veg Grower Podcast Supporters Club is how we keep this podcast running. For just £5 a month, you can be a member too and help support this podcast. As a member, you will receive extra behind-the-scenes podcasts, as well as a collection of seeds sent to your door each and every month that you are a member. And those seeds can be sown in the very month that they are sent about. So they're not hanging around or anything like that. Now, if you want to become a member or find out more, then head to thevegrowerpodcast.co.uk. However, you can also support our podcast by rating and reviewing on your podcast provider. Now, this very simple act helps the algorithms work their magic and promote this podcast to other people who might be interested in growing their own food. So if you have just 2 minutes spare, then please do rate and review this podcast. Now, with the drop in temperatures, it's time to show our chickens a bit of TLC. Now, our feathered friends are pretty tough animals. They're covered in feathers, of course, which are there to trap in the heat and keep them warm. But as it gets colder and the sunlight gets less, it does become a little harder for them. So I think it's only right we give them a bit of attention now in order that they have a bit of an easier time throughout the winter. And the first thing I like to do is to give the coop a really good deep clean. Now, this involves sweeping everything down and washing everything out with a hose pipe and water. And added to that, I actually like to use an organic chicken coop disinfectant just to really kill off anything that might cause problems. Now, my reasoning for this is that the chickens will be spending more time actually in the coop. We have longer nights and chickens tend to take themselves off to bed when the sun goes down. So they spend longer and longer in the coop. And I figured if we do it now, it's going to have a good time to really thoroughly dry out so our chickens are not sleeping in a damp environment. It becomes harder and harder to really stop a damp environment as it gets colder and colder, I think. Now, I always try and change the bedding and wood shavings on a weekly basis, and I will actually continue to do that throughout the winter. But what I do know some people tend to do is that they will just add fresh bedding on top of the old soiled material. Now, this is actually a pretty good idea in some cases. I personally don't do it because I don't like the idea of it. But what it's actually doing is effectively composting in the coop. And that gives off a bit of heat, which helps the chickens. We're lucky where I am. We're pretty mild, so I don't feel I need to do that. Plus, the coop I have is quite well insulated. It's the Egloo Cube I have. Now, Egloo actually sell thermal blankets for this coop, but if we really felt it was too cold, we could just actually bungee cord some other blankets around it to keep it warm. But again, this is not something I have ever had to do in the past, and I don't really feel we need to do that. Anyway, with the coop now prepared, it's time to turn our attention to the run. Now again, I like to disinfect in all the feeders and water bowls now while we can. And that's just simply a case of removing them, giving them a good wash, disinfecting them, letting them dry and popping them back in. Now, inside the run, because we are on a clay soil, and during winter here, the clay soil can become very, very sticky. And I look at the chickens' feet sometimes and they're covered in mud, which doesn't get off. So that can be a bit of a problem with them. So what I'd like to do is dig out some of the soil on the inside. Now this is where the chickens themselves, they've been scratching up at the soil, digging it up, pooping in it and what have you. So it's effectively making a really good compost in there. But by digging it out, just gives them a bit more fresher, nicer stuff. And then I like to add a bit of sand so that they can have their dust baths, and it helps with the drainage inside the coop. Now, eventually the sand does get incorporated in the soil, so it doesn't last for too long, but just doing it just helps the chickens out for a little bit longer, I like to think. Now, of course, what I also like to do is add a few slabs in there as well so that chickens can actually get out of the mud should they need to. Now, over the top, I always pot over a cover. Now, this could be a tarpaulin, but again, with my Egloo Cube, Egloo actually make a bungee corded top that I've put over it. Now, this helps keep the run dry, which does help with the drainage issues that I have. But more importantly, it helps keep the wild birds out of the run as well. Now, in the last few years, bird flu has become a recurring problem, and I'm expecting it to become a problem in the next few weeks. So when DEFRA announce that bird flu measures have to be taken in place, it often means keeping wild birds out of a coop. Really, you should be bringing the chickens indoors. That is not practical. So we've got to keep the wild birds out of a coop, and that's where this top does help. That way, even if they're flying and they poop, it's not going to land in the chickens. That's the idea behind it. Now, this is often what we nickname in the chicken world as flock down, where chickens have to be kept indoors and away from wild birds. As I said, I'm expecting it to happen within the next few weeks, so be prepared for that. Now, DEFRA do ask that our shoes are disinfected before entering the chicken run. So getting hold of a bowl big enough for my feet, which is difficult when you're size 12, is worth getting hold of and adding some disinfectant to that. But regardless of bird flu, I do think it is important that our chickens still have entertainment throughout the year as well. And making entertainment for the chickens is a must. We're going to be having Halloween in a couple of weeks, and something that I know many people like to do is carve pumpkins. Well, when we are finished with these carved pumpkins, what we can actually do is place these inside the chicken runs and let insects get all over these pumpkins. The chickens will love munch on the pumpkins and on the insects. What is a good idea to actually do is drop the pumpkin from a height and let it splatter all over the place. Chickens will love it and they will have a great old time. I also like to hang whole cabbages up from the roof in the run for the chickens to peck at. This also involves them jumping up to get hold of it. It gives them a bit of fun, a bit of exercise at the same time, and helps keep them warm. Now, added to that, something that we can also do in order to keep our chickens warm is add a handful of corn to the run. Now, during the winter months, this is actually extra important because chickens warm up after eating corn. And every evening, I will just throw in a handful of corn just before they go to bed. They will eat on it and then they go into their coop and their metabolism is keeping them a little bit warmer for a little bit longer. Just a little thing like that helps. Now, moving to outside of the run, we have had a tidy up, I've already mentioned, clearing away the weeds and trimming up the herbs. This allows a bit more light into the coop as well. I think this is quite important. Chickens lay eggs depending on the amount of sunlight. So just letting in a little bit more light will do them the world of good. But egg production will be massively reduced during the winter months. That doesn't mean we can't stop looking after our girls. We've got to look after them. We've got to entertain them as well. Now, what we are considering doing is getting a couple of extra chickens over the next couple of weeks, just before flock down comes in. Now, the idea for this is that because our chickens aren't going to lay when the light levels are low, and generally when you get new chickens, it takes them a while to lay eggs. So I'm thinking if we got some new chickens, say at the beginning of November, by the time the light levels get back, say February, March, these new chickens are likely to start laying then. That way we've combined the times that the chickens don't lay with the times that the new chickens aren't quite there to start laying. Now that's our plan. I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen yet. It's something me and my wife are currently discussing, but I think for me, it makes a lot of sense to combine the two. Now, this, of course, means that next spring, the birds will all start laying. Bear, who we've had for 8 years now, she's an old bird. She doesn't lay. It costs us money feeding her, but she doesn't lay. I wouldn't get rid of her for the world of it, but it just goes to show that these birds can last a long time. Then, of course, we have Gertie and Martha in there as well. So two more will bring us up to five. That's our ideas anyway, and if you've got any tips on how you look after your chickens throughout the winter, please do get in touch. Be great to leave a comment on the bottom of a blog post in order to share your tips so others can see them, especially if they have chickens themselves and they are new to chicken keeping. Right guys, Scott has got another delicious recipe for us this week, and it involves pumpkins. So let's go find out what he's got.
Hi, it's Scott here with this week's recipe, and I haven't shared a sweet recipe before, so I thought it was about time to do so. And it's a good one, I think. It's sticky pumpkin cake with a spiced toffee sauce. Think sticky toffee pudding vibes, but we're using pumpkin instead of dates, so it's even got one of your five a day, so it's practically healthy, well, kind of. It's great served warm with vanilla ice cream, and is lovely this time of year. So let's find out how it's made and jump straight into the recipe. Ingredients for the cake are 225 grams of butter, 190 grams of black treacle, 150 grams of golden syrup, 170 grams of dark muscovado sugar, 3 large eggs, 40 millilitres of milk, 300 grams of pumpkin puree, 360 grams of plain flour, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 1 teaspoon of ground ginger, 1 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon of ground cloves, and 1/2 teaspoon of ground mixed spice. The ingredients for the spiced toffee sauce are 300 millilitres of double cream, 300 grams of muscovado sugar, 150 grams of unsalted butter, 1 cinnamon stick, 1 clove, and 1 slice of fresh ginger. Now that we've got the ingredients together, we can make a start by making the pumpkin puree. Do this by putting 300 grams of diced pumpkin into a baking tray and cover with tin foil and bake in the oven until tender, and then mash it together to make a puree. Then in a pan, while stirring, melt together the butter, black treacle, golden syrup and muscovado sugar until the sugar is dissolved and everything is mixed together. Then add this mixture to a mixing bowl and allow to cool off slightly. Then whisk in the pumpkin puree, eggs and milk, and then fold in the dry ingredients. Pour into a lined 9 by 11 inch cake tin and bake at 170 degrees for about 30 to 40 minutes, or until you can insert a knife in and it comes out clean. Then set it aside. For the toffee sauce, in a pan, melt together the butter, sugar, along with the spices, and then add the cream and bring to a boil. When the cake is ready, pour some of the toffee sauce over the top and allow to cool. Then serve the cake warm with some more toffee sauce and vanilla ice cream. And that's it. I hope you enjoy it.
Where you find me down the allotment currently. It's been actually a very slow week here, and it's been difficult to get stuck into many jobs. It's been a little bit cold. We've had rain, as I said earlier, so the weather's been very, very changeable, and I'm noticing there's less and less other allotment holders here. Now, that's something that does happen throughout the winter months. Less and less of the other allotment holders tend to come down to their allotment, saving it until spring. Not me. I will be down here constantly, at least once a week. Maybe not daily, because it's not so easy to get here daily now, but at least once a week I will be down here and tackling a few tasks. I don't believe that we should stop gardening throughout the winter, especially when you're trying to grow our own food. However, one task that I have been doing and concentrating on this week is planting out our overwintered onion set. Every year I grow overwintered onions. For me, I like the fact that my allotment looks like it's doing something over winter and has stuff growing in it that is going to feed me later on in the year. Obviously, we have garlic, broad beans and onions, to name a few, that will still be growing here. But what I will say when it comes to overwintered onions is that, yes, they will grow and we can get earlier harvests. In fact, I start harvesting some onions from about February by growing them over winter. They're small, but when you run out of onions in your stores, it's always good to have that backup. But usually we leave them to grow until June, July time anyway, and then we harvest them. But there's a good chance with overwintered onions that they will bolt and they don't store for as long. So, yeah, it is good to grow overwintered onions. I will always do it. But the spring planted ones really are where you really benefit from it. But to plant out our onion sets, what I first had to do was make sure the bed was thoroughly prepared. Now, this bed had already had a load of compost added to it, but there was a cabbage still in its place. Now, this cabbage, I've been waiting for it to reach maturity. And it formed a small head, but it wasn't getting much bigger or it was going to be very slow. So I decided we're going to cut that off early. We took that little head home and we're going to turn that into something. It's still completely edible. It's just hasn't reached its full potential, but never mind that. But with that cabbage cleared, we then spread a bit more compost and gave everything a really good hoe to make sure any weeds were killed off. And with that, with all the compost now fully spread in the ground, nice and level, it was time to plant out our sets. Now, we could grow our onions from seed, but I find that growing from sets just saves a little bit of time when I'm pretty busy. We will sow onion seed in December, but onion sets are basically immature bulbs. They've already been sown from seed and they've been grown into these 1 centimetre onions and then had the tops chopped off and put into a bag and into a garden centre to be sold. And all we've got to do is take those onion sets, dip a hole and drop an onion set in. Now, when I dip a hole, I try and get it to about 5 centimetres deep, which means when I drop the onion in, we're usually about 2.5 centimetres below soil level for the tip of the onion. That I find to give the onions plenty of room. And then we repeat that, giving about 10 centimetres of space for each onion. But what I've actually done last year, and it's something I've used this year as well, is my own onion dibbing tool. Basically, it's a length of wood that's 1.4 metres long, which is specifically designed that it fits inside my beds, and all of my beds are built to the same size. But along this bed, and every 10 centimetres, I've attached a piece of dowel, which is 5 centimetres long, and then I've screwed that onto the wood. What this means is I place this piece of wood with the dowels pointing down onto the soil. I push down, the dowels go into the soil, dib in a hole, that just saves me a lot of time, and it means all my onions are nice and straight. This is a great little thing that I made, really happy with it, and it really does make time pretty quick when it comes to sowing onions. And it's as easy as that when it comes to sowing these onion sets. Dig a hole, drop the onion sets in, and then we give it a good watering. That way the water will push all the soil to fall back into the hole. And in no time at all, we had the entire bed filled up with these sets. Nice, quick and easy. And that has really been what I've focused on the allotment this week. And that basically brings us to the end of this week's allotment update. And that is the end of this week's podcast. I hope you have enjoyed it. If you have, then please do leave us a rating and leave us a review on your podcast provider, as mentioned earlier. If you have enjoyed this podcast and you want to support the work that we do, then please consider becoming a member of our supporters club. Details on that at theveggrowerpodcast.co.uk. Now, if you want to get in touch, then please do email me, richard@theveggrowerpodcast.co.uk, or you can visit the website and leave a voicemail. Again, the website is theveggrowerpodcast.co.uk. Now, finally, don't forget to find us on social media, where you can follow and see more of the things that we are up to. And not forgetting our Facebook group. Right, that is it for this week. So until next time, please take care.